Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
Many people believe that they are somewhat full of themselves and have an overinflated sense of themselves, but it's actually arising from the opposite. It's arising from intolerable feelings of worthlessness, powerlessness, inadequacy, and so they're overcompensating. And when you encounter someone with a malignant level of narcissism, then they become destructive to their lives and others' lives.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and today, wow, we are so lucky to have Dr. Bandy Lee joining us, who is a forensic psychiatrist, and she also has a master's in divinity. She's an MD. She received both her MD and her master's in divinity from Yale University. She gained worldwide notoriety with her book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, in which 27 mental health experts weighed in on the mental health of the president. And she's also an international global leader in the area of global violence prevention through the World Health Organization's Violence Prevention Alliance and through her writings, such as in her textbook, Violence. She's an expert on narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder, more importantly, exposing the dangers of people with this personality type. And she offers education and resources to people so that they not only can learn, but actually have the right tools. And so today she's going to be talking about narcissists and then offering her prescription for survival and dealing with them in your own life. So welcome, Dr. Lee.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So I talk about all kinds of narcissistic traits here on this podcast and on my YouTube channel, because I think it's important that people understand the personality type when they go to negotiate with them. They don't think the way other people think. They're not driven by the same incentives that other people are. They're not motivated the same way. And so let's just start off with kind of a basic, how you would actually define a narcissist.
So narcissism by itself is not really a problem. We actually need a certain dose of narcissism to get by our daily life. So there is a whole spectrum. There's benign narcissism and malignant narcissism. It's the malignant pathological narcissism that becomes a problem. And when you have pathological narcissism, that includes narcissistic personality disorder, then it comes to a point where it's going to affect their function and their relationships. And the way I conceive of narcissistic pathology is rather simple, that many people believe that they are somewhat full of themselves and have an overinflated sense of themselves, but it's actually arising from the opposite. It's arising from intolerable feelings of worthlessness, powerlessness, inadequacy, and so they're overcompensating. And when you encounter someone with a malignant level of narcissism, then they become destructive to their lives and others' lives.
How would you define the notion of narcissistic supply?
So narcissistic supply is because they don't have the basic requisite amount of self-love, really. So narcissism arises generally from not having received love early in childhood, and so their development is somewhat arrested. And then they cannot generate the love for themselves on their own. So many of us can get by the day without having lots of people constantly adoring us and giving us compliments and approval. We can give that to ourselves, but not those suffering from pathological narcissism. And so they go for more and more of that supply from the outside. And so that is why you see individuals with pathological narcissism go after power positions, go after celebrity positions, and for the sake of it. Not all celebrities have this condition, but those with this condition are very drawn to celebrity positions or power positions, even the presidency of the United States. They are drawn to this for in order to get their emotional supply of this narcissistic need. But of course, they're going after what is not really taking care of the problem. So their need is boundless. No amount of external adulation will ever satisfy the inner hunger that they have. And so they'll just keep going for more and more and bigger and have even greater expectations that no one can eventually fulfill. So their relationships are very dysfunctional. They idealize, think that people will rescue them, and then devalue them. It's called splitting, in that you first attach yourself to people believing that they will give you what you need, and then discover that they don't. And so you discard people one by one. That's a common dynamic with those of narcissistic pathology.
Yeah, it's like a black hole. It can never be filled, right? And I love your explanations. It's, you know, exactly what I say all the time. And so when they're going to negotiate, they have this need for narcissistic supply, which a lot of times in negotiation can show up as constantly moving the goalposts. In other words, I'll settle for this. And then you say yes, and then they change it. And then the deal is something else. And then they blame it on you. You know, I had to add this because you did this, or I took this away because you acted this way. It's a constant need to move the goalpost in order to continue to intimidate and get this supply. So when they're doing this, are they capable of seeing the big picture? Can they delay that quick reward associated with the need for control in order to realize a greater goal? I mean, are they able to even do that?
That's often what we observe, that if they were able to do that, it would not be pathological narcissism. In other words, pathology is always dysfunctional and leads to damage, either to the self or others, or both. And so when they are pathologically in need of narcissistic supply, they are, it's, I have made the analogy to a drowning individual. So when you're gasping for air, you are unable to think of long-term goals, no matter how important and how critical, and no matter how many people it influences, you can only think about yourself and what you need at that moment. And so usually with those who have pathological levels of narcissism are not able to consider the future, even if it were to bring them greater rewards of narcissistic fulfillment.
Yeah, so in a way, they become their own greatest enemy.
That's right.
Yeah, and they don't even see that. And so what I try to tell people and teach people is, you know, they will self-destruct at some point. If you bring...
Yes, that's kind of the definition of pathology, in that healthy choices or ideas, even styles, are all life-affirming. But when you have pathology, it's disordered. And so even when you believe that you are taking care of yourself and benefiting yourself, even at the expense of others, you're eventually not going to be doing that. You will eventually also destroy yourself and be of harm rather than benefit.
Yeah, it's just getting there, though, because in the process, their goal is to take you down, to do whatever they need to destroy you. And so, you know, they appear to be in control, even if they're faced with actual proof of lies, proof of their wrongdoing, proof of them being irresponsible. They appear to be so resilient, and they're constantly, it just feels like they're constantly dodging bullets. I mean, all the way to high political positions. And I promised myself I wouldn't be super political in this particular interview, but they get themselves to high positions. I mean, it could be a CEO, it could be, you know, a high position within a church even. Some of the covert narcissists are really good at looking perfect, looking kind, looking like they care about people even though they don't. And so is that how they really feel inside? Do they really feel like they're always in control? What's going on inside their brains when they're being called out like that?
Yes, oftentimes they think they are brilliant and that they know better than everyone else, and that their methods are far smarter and more beneficial to them. And you're right in that it has nothing to do with political affiliation. It is a medical condition, and that's why it doesn't really matter what ideology you espouse. Most of the time, the ideology they espouse are not even able to be believed in. They simply cannot hold an ideology because they are so urgently seeking that narcissistic fulfillment. And so they often attach themselves to ideologies or even political affiliation based on what would be beneficial and what would bring them accolades and advancement rather than true belief.
So do they perceive themselves in that moment to be good? Like, is that what allows them to justify their harmful actions to themselves? Or like, what's going on inside of their brain at that moment?
Well, we're talking about severe narcissism here. And just as they cannot hold an ideology for its own sake, right or wrong is they're capable of distinguishing them, but they it's often so muted and so distant compared to their immediate emotional needs. So they're driven more by the emotional drive of what they feel they need, which is the adulation and approval and adoration to stratospheric levels. Essentially, it'll never be satisfied, so they keep asking for more and more. Oftentimes, the experience of these individuals is that they're able to manipulate others and shape others' view of them, at least in the beginning, that you buy into those those stories, that they are superhuman or they are exceptionally ingenious or highly accomplished. And they're also good at seducing others because they feel that that's how they will get their narcissistic supply. And they also often elevate you and believe that you will be their rescuer because you are mirroring them back or responding to their charm, what have you. And so that cycle of idealization and then devaluation means that the initial impression is that that they will seem ideal. They will seem like great personalities with lots of charisma.
Well, absolutely. But I think like my question is also really more around, like, you know, you have proof that they're lying. You have proof that they were irresponsible. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, some of the people that I've had that have worked for me who always have excuses as to why they're not doing their work or not, you know, and it's like, in their mind, do they truly believe their own lies? Like, that's not correct, or you know, it's somebody else's fault. Do they actually believe that in their mind?
They often do. Because they often have a hard time with reality because, well, true reality means facing their feelings of inadequacy and worthlessness. And so they have to create in their own minds a scenario where either persecuted or misunderstood in order to maintain the concept that they are superior to others. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that actually can also inhibit them from doing what they need to actually have things to offer, such as, for example, they could be prevented from learning the material in school because they, in order to learn something, you have to admit that you don't know something. And in a position of power, you might refuse to get information or advice because you have to know everything already.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
I often describe it like a car without brakes. When you have a car that is not fully functioning, it might seem like it's going faster than a fully functioning car, but at the very end, it always crashes.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp can assist you today with your own licensed professional therapist. Private, online, super convenient. You're communicating in less than 24 hours, no waiting room, no leaving your house even. And they are committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So it's easy to change therapists if you need to change therapists. They can help you if you're wherever you are in the world, worldwide, with anything such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts. Anything you share is confidential, super convenient, affordable. I want you to start living a happier life today. And so as a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/breakingfree. Join over 800,000 people by taking charge of your mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/breakingfree. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
Here's the not-so-secret secret, though, and that is, you are the stronger one. they are actually the weaker one, and they go to great lengths to hide that from you.
And now we return to today's show.
And if they don't know something, or if they do admit that they were wrong in some way, that is like exposing that little child that is fragile inside of them that can't be exposed.
Yes, right? It's a like, very, very fragile condition where that is the intolerable reality that they would do anything to avoid. And there's also a thing called psychotic spiral that happens in narcissistic individuals, and in that they can truly become psychotic. In other words, lose touch with reality when the urgency of that need to think of oneself as superior, brilliant, ideal becomes so great, and they're under pressure or assault from reality. That is, they're confronted with facts and evidence, and then they go into a spiral where they will lose touch with reality.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that collapse. I mean, I know I have. When you finally expose them or threat to expose them in a certain way, because that's how I teach how to negotiate with them. It's threaten a source of supply that's more important for them to keep than the supply that they get from jerking you around in your case. And the supply source that they want to keep is usually going to be around how they look and their image. That's going to be more important to them. And so that's the key in how to negotiate with them, is what I say. So I just had a conversation recently with actually another mental health professional, a psychologist. And she said that she thought that narcissists appear to be smarter than everyone else because they're so good at manipulating people in situations. Mm-hmm. And I know you had a chapter on this in your book, and I thought this was really fascinating. Would you attribute their abilities to a high level of intellect, or is it alternatively that they're highly skilled at manipulation, or both? In other words, is the notion of, are they crazy or crazy like a fox?
Yes, I deal with individuals who are not crazy like a fox. So it is a real condition, and it's they will come across as being particularly skilled and better at getting approval and high ratings than other individuals who have true intellect or true gifts because of their urgency. This is a life and death issue for them. And we also don't recognize that our mental activity is mostly unconscious. In fact, according to neuroscientists, about 98% of our mental activity is unconscious. So when you're conscious, when your highest functioning is not doing all that well and you're impaired, then the subconscious takes over, and it might seem like it's more efficient. It obtains for you what you would like. It's very efficient at manipulating, gaslighting, and controlling other people in some ways. It's a handicap. I often describe it like a car without brakes. When you have a car that is not fully functioning, it might seem like it's going faster than a fully functioning car, but at the very end, it always crashes. And so it might seem more efficient, and it is, but it's leading to the wrong place. It's leading to a place of damage and destruction for others as well as for oneself.
That's a really, really great analogy. I love that. And so, you know, they'll do anything to survive, right? I mean, it's in their mind, it's a game of survival. And if and I have to survive at the expense of you, because that's the only way I can survive.
That's right. Yeah. We need to have compassion for them, and get them treatment, oftentimes they will switch the situation around and say that you need treatment and something is wrong with you instead. Right. But to recognize these symptoms and to basically say, if you have any relationship with them, if you say that, you know, if they don't get treatment, you can't be in a relationship with them, then that's often the motivator. They can't observe their own behavior, but they can observe, they can experience the sting of someone telling them that the relationship is going to end unless they get help. That's usually how they seek help, not on their own.
And most of them don't seek help, right? Because they don't feel like they need it. I mean, that would be, you know, exposing that little person inside of them that can't be exposed. So another question I often get is, can they change? Can they get rehabilitated? Can they become, you know, regular, you know, people being driven and motivated by all sorts of things?
I usually say narcissistic personality disordered individuals are treatable. They have not gone so far as to be irreversible irreversible in that they cannot get back on track for development. Oftentimes, sociopathy is seen as the extreme end of narcissism. In other words, pathological narcissism then at a certain point passes over into sociopathy, sometimes called psychopathy. And that's when things become untreatable. That's when the inner core is missing altogether.
Yeah, and would you say it's pretty rare that they get rehabilitated?
No, I think they treatment is very hard because it is a severe condition. And as you said, built into that is a lack of insight, that is self-awareness.
And they don't usually seek out help.
But once they seek out help, you can turn them around. Psychotherapy is often effective, and as I said, getting them there is the biggest task. But right. Psychotherapy, after a few years on its own, can help them. Usually a life crisis can turn things around more quickly. So if they were met with divorce, or all their family left them, or they were led into trouble at work or with the law, then those kinds of things can turn them around more quickly.
But for people who are actually dealing with the toxicity of it on the front lines right now, sitting around and waiting for them to change or hoping that they're going to is probably not a good idea.
Yes. Don't really try to accommodate them or tolerate them. Those things actually enable them and make them worse. So the thing to do is to set limits, first of all, to protect oneself and to limit one's exposure to these individuals, and leave them if you can, if it doesn't compromise things too much. If you can't leave them, make sure they get therapy, and perhaps you would need therapy for being exposed to them, so that you don't lose touch with reality and who's really doing the harm here.
Yeah, and so we're kind of getting into your prescriptions for survival. Boundaries, of course, are really, really important. Leaving them if you can, as you just mentioned. What else would you say to survive being with narcissists or dealing with one right in your life right now?
So as I said, protecting oneself, taking care of one's mental health, that is done through limit setting and drawing strict boundaries and not being pulled into the kind of emotional manipulation or abuse, actually, that usually emanates from those with pathological narcissism. And so the prescription for survival that you mentioned, prescriptionforsurvival.org, for those who are interested, that was pertaining to a particular person exhibiting pathological narcissism, but basically it recommends removal of the exposure, if not removal of the relationship.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, taking the emotion out of it is, it can be so hard, but, you know, I often say at the moment that you're in the, you know, dealing with them and you're in the thick of it, just don't let them, I always say, don't let them see you sweat, or just the facts, ma'am or sir, you know, like the old television show, you know, just respond with facts. Don't get drawn down. Don't get, you know, into the mud with them. And then, you know, if you're, once you're not dealing with them and you're back in your own bedroom or in the shower or whatever, you can cry, scream, go to your mental health expert, get the support that you need. But at the moment, don't give them that, because that gives them narcissistic supply.
That's right.
So, yeah. So, is there anything else that you would want to share with the audience here about dealing with narcissists, or like, you know, what would be the one piece of advice that you would want to give them?
Self-care is number one with those when
good. Yeah, I like that.
With those with narcissism. And unfortunately, it seems like we have an epidemic of it going on in this country. And so to be aware of it, to be well educated, I would recommend my co-author's book, the author who wrote about narcissism in our book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. He wrote a very authoritative book on narcissism. I believe it's Rethinking Narcissism.
And the author is?
Dr. Craig Malkin.
Yes.
So educating oneself about this condition and seeing the signs and recognizing where the problem lies, that the problem does not lie in oneself when dealing with a narcissist, but...
it's so important, realizing it's not personal.
That's right.
Yeah. So where can people learn more about you, your books, your resources?
I have a website, bandylee.com. That's BANDYLEE.com. I have a new book out, Profile of a Nation, that speaks about the president. It's a psychological profile of the president in relationship to his followers and the nation, because even when we think about individuals, they are in an ecology. So we're all influenced, not just by those who have shaped our lives and our personal relationships, but the culture at large and the nation at large all play a role in our personalities. And so so becoming aware of those influences and maintaining our health, our own emotional health, not neglecting that, giving our own selves what we need, and maintaining our own health. If we ourselves become traumatized or mentally unhealthy, then we can also become drawn to unhealthy individuals, which repeats the cycle of trauma or abuse. And so it's very important to maintain our mental health, just as we do our physical health. And whereas for physical health, we would exercise and eat healthy foods, for our emotional health, it's important that we put aside time for rest, and meditation is usually good, but to give ourselves the room to dream, to simply indulge in enjoyment. I usually recommend an hour a day, an afternoon a week, and a vacation once in a while for our own mental health, pursuing hobbies we enjoy, relationships we enjoy, but devoting it to pure enjoyment, which is very important, because when we're healthy, we do seek out the things that are good for us. So it's important to maintain that and to prevent our falling into a place where we can become compromised.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful, perfect way to end this interview. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee. Really, really helpful and essential, crucial information on prescription for survival and how to deal with narcissists on the front line. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.